Indigenous territories that let us film and record on their land. Music by Gijagukwe, Garlic Brown, and Thomas X. Theme music by Keese IMC. Definition of Resilience is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov, the Siri Foundation, Margaret Casey Foundation, Progressive and Social Justice Fund of the Alaska Community Foundation, Atwood Foundation, Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You just heard an Indigify special about Alaska Native hip-hop artists. That's it for Stage and Studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
Andy Wawo looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Wawo, silver scream, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Jordan Schnitzer. Jordan is the foremost collector of prints in the U.S. and sponsor of several museums and hundreds of museum shows. But today, Jordan has agreed to show us around his own house and talk about four works of art that are especially dear and meaningful to him. Thank you so much for this opportunity, Jordan.
And one of the pieces he's picked out is above the fireplace in his bedroom. And Jordan, thanks for doing Art Focus in these strange times. And tell us, what is this piece for?
Well, as many of you know, art plays a very important part of my life. And we have a big traveling art exhibition program where we get art out to less served communities, and it brings joy to my heart to share art. So I'm delighted to talk about what I live with. This is a piece in my master bedroom. I wake up every day to this Frank Stella work from a series he did in 1994 that's just magical. And the other reason I like it is because below it are pictures of my daughters and my sons and my mother, and also a little football from the Rose Bowl, U of O Ducks. Go Ducks. Now, Frank Stella is one of the last of the most important artists of the 20th and now 21st century. And as you can see in this work, he has an amazing sense of color. He does these prints and paintings of collages and drawings, and he just takes you on a journey. And when I look at that, it takes my breath away. And when you go through what we're all going through now, the anguish of this terrible disease that's going across the country, we also know that the doctors say if you have good spirit and good attitude, you're better fighting off these germs. So for me, art nourishes my heart and my soul. And what I would suggest to everyone, whether you have art in your house or you look around at nature, the trees, the rivers, the mountains, the flowers, the bushes, try to add something of beauty in your life every day, where you look at it and you realize how lucky we are to be alive and how lucky we are to have beautiful things around us. So I appreciate all of Frank Stella's work. If you look at this work in particular, you see that he has a lot of scribble, the colors, the collage pieces, the images, the grid pieces. Every time I look at it, I see something new. And that's the same if you look at things around you in your own home. So enjoy art. It nourishes your soul while we're all trying to practice being safe.
So the piece is from a series, right? It's a print from a series called Lumeria.
Yes, yes.
And it's from 1994.
Yes.
So what's the rest of the series like? Is it as brightly colored and complex as this?
Yes, they all look very similar to this. Each one different, but he was into sort of this theme of just looking at time and space and colors and taking images from works that he'd had for years and applying them all together in a particular wonderful mosaic of colors and shapes and forms.
What type of print is it?
This is a lithograph. Mm-hmm. And this was done by a master printer named Ken Tyler. And Ken Tyler was the printer and, of all of the works that, the majority of works that Ken Tyler did. And when Ken Tyler decided to stop making prints 12 years ago, Frank Stella stopped making prints. He's still making sculptures and paintings, but his legacy of works on paper is just top of the heap.
So he trusted this Ken Tyler to do what he wanted, and then after that, he's like, I'm good. Yes. No one else can match him.
It's a wonderful thing about works on paper is certainly artists can publish them themselves and have a printer in their workshop, but that magic of working with master printers that technologically have the expertise to help take the artist's inspiration and help make it push that envelope to do things on paper that's never been done before. It was really fun. We had a major show of Frank Stella's work. We have about 150 of them. We've had a tour of his work nationally, and Ken Tyler came to several of those openings. For me to walk with Frank Stella and Ken Tyler together and be a little bird listening to them talk about how they created the work was one of the highlights of my art life. And Ken would say, remember, Frank, we had 8 people working on this for 2 months and it didn't work and we had to keep throwing them away. And then we finally figured out technologically how to make your ideas come to fruition. Just a wonderful experience.
Zoom in a bit on the image and just tell us what are some of the elements in it.
Well, he loves, in his sculptural paintings, he takes metal and steel and wood and plastic and he makes them very three-dimensional. So even though this is a one-dimensional piece, it almost seems to just lift itself off the paper and let you be drawn into this journey. Whether it's the yellow images up there, the scribblings all around it, the images like from a metal screen with the openings. He just sees the world in a different way than most of us. And that's what's wonderful about an artist. They don't limit themselves as many of us do. So part of the inspiration of this is for all of us, think outside that box. Don't be limited in your thoughts about whatever it is in your life and your experiences.
Mm-hmm. So, is it purely abstract, or is he using architectural elements we recognize, like, you know, columns from Greek columns?
Yes, very true. His work is very architectural, and if you think about think about the buildings, the shapes, the forms around us in everyday life. One thing Andy Warhol was amazing about is he kept using that word, the democratization of art, telling us that art is not just in museums, it's all around us. As I suggest in my talks, the greatest living abstract artist is Mother Nature. No one is as good. Look at Mount Hood in the morning when you see the sun on it in that shape and form. Look at the trees and bushes around you. No artist could be as good at taking those objects and shaping and forming them in the way that nature does. The artists do a brilliant job, but open your eyes and heart, and especially during this complicated time, let some joy flow into your heart and mind. It helps keep a better perspective. We know that we will get through this together. The quarantine makes it a lonely experience sometimes, but look around in your own apartment or house. Look at the shape of a bowl or flowers that you have, or look outside the window at your gardens. And art is all around you, and it's always there whenever you need it, whenever you want it.
The piece, do you know how he began it? Did he draw it with use a pencil? Did he use a paintbrush? What was the beginning of the imagery?
Well, he starts off on a piece of paper, and he just starts drawing, and then he starts taking other pieces in a collage-like way and putting it on and working it through. And usually the artist does several trial proofs where he or she is experimenting with what they want the addition work to look like. Now, this is actually an artist proof, meaning this is one of the ones that he was working on to see how he wanted it to turn out. And they keep tweaking and tweaking and tweaking until it suddenly feels right. But let's maybe go on to another piece.
And just before you go, could you say that in the process of making the prints, so the final editions, would what's the process? Do they use photography, you know, to make a lithograph? How does the master printer work?
Well, in this case, the lithography, it's the master printer takes the image that the artist wants, and then he basically creates the woodblock, the etching, the stone, depending upon what technique it is, then puts a piece of paper down on that, and then smashes the paper down under pressure with a wheel, and the paper goes through the press, and out comes an amazing work. Now, in works like this, where there are multiple colors, oftentimes they'll have to do it over and over and over again for each individual color. So this work probably went through the press 25 or 30 times.
Oh, okay. Because it has an amazing variety of colors. I mean,
yes.
Pink, turquoise, mustard.
Yes. No, brilliant.
So many colors, it looks like a lot of work.
Brilliant colorist. But let's go see another work or two.
Yeah.
Let's see, should we do the Jane Hammond, or should we do
The Damien Hirst, or the Damien
Hirst? Let's do the Damien Hirst.
Okay.
Okay. This house is on the Willamette River. So this is a work by Damien Hirst, the brilliant British artist. And he takes objects around us. He did a big series on pills. He's done lots of images of dots of color. He got into about 15, 20 years ago, butterflies. And he's done many major unique works with actual butterflies where he gets thousands of them and arranges them in just like this print. And what's wonderful about this is I just talked about nature. So you take a look at Mother Nature and you think about butterflies. They're such beautiful creatures. And we see them in the summer in warm temperatures flitting around, and they're magical and just ethereal, the way they just move and so forth. So this work, when you look at this, he's taking an object that we all see and love in nature, and he uses it in such a brilliant, abstract, artistic way. And in the center is one that actually shows the little spines and colors and shapes of the butterfly. Then they take other wings. He has all these different varieties of butterflies. So just brilliant. And,
you know, what's this, Gordon, what's this piece called?
There's no name on this. This is just a series he's done on butterflies. He didn't name his butterfly series. But it's
It looks like it's a very symmetrical sort of radial pattern. It looks like a rose window in a cathedral, right?
It does. Very much so. Very much so.
Uh-huh. And in the center, for those who can't see, there's a pink butterfly surrounded by a circle of yellow wings which have been taken off, so they're separate. Then beyond that, there's a mauve, and then pink, and then sort of light green. And it radiates that, but the spaces between the butterfly leaves are very dark. They're black, basically. What is that blackness? Is that paper or is that paint or what?
It's just the paint. But what it does then is it makes the colorful butterfly just jump out at you. So I think what's interesting here is that wonderful tension between the organic, the unpredictable, the lyrical fluidity of butterflies flying around, flitting around, and yet the very organized, methodical way he's put them together. And I think that creates a fabulous tension that plays with your mind. And he's just brilliant. Now, you know, all of us are artists. We all had art classes in grade school and high school. How many times have we sat down at a table waiting in a restaurant and there's been some crayons there? If you have little kids, as I do, you're making crayon things all the time. So we're all artists. But to move up to be the level of a Damien Hirst and be in all the major international museums, you've got to have a passion about what you want to do, and you've got to do it in a different way. Now, butterflies have been around for eons, right? And butterflies have been involved in many paintings before, but no one's quite done it the way that he's done it. And this is why he's a brilliant artist. And he keeps pushing that envelope, pushing himself to do new themes and styles and so forth. So he's come back often to butterflies, but what I love about this again, especially during this time, is when you look at this, first, the colors are beautiful, makes you smile. Second, you think of those warm summer days of flowers and butterflies flitting around in their sort of, you know, magic way with their wings, and they land on little plants to, you know, suck the nectar. So it brings a smile to my face. And as we suggested during this difficult time, we need to also remember that that there's lots of beauty in life every day, even during the anguish of the isolation we're going through now and battling this terrible virus.
And John, this is a print, right? These are not actual butterfly glued to paper.
Right, this is a print, the which is, you know, reasonably priced. The ones he does with the actual butterflies in the contemporary art world are very, very, very expensive.
And, do you know what form of print this was? Was this another lithograph?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who his master printer is?
This is probably done, there's a publisher in England called Paragon, and I'm sure that they published this print. I'm quite sure of that.
We can always cross-reference.
Yeah, no, it does. So Paragon publishes most of his prints, and it's a wonderful publisher. Does Anish Kapoor, a lot of other artists too.
And do you know what year this work is from?
I imagine this is about 2004 or 2005.
Did you get it at the time, or have you acquired it later?
I bought this from the publisher. So because I've become the largest private contemporary print collector in the country, because I'm building this big public collection, I work directly with the publishers, and they're very good to be giving me big discounts, because aside from the works I have in the house that I enjoy, the majority of the collection is available to museums across the country that we loan the work for free. We've had 20 exhibitions last year, 20 this year. We had 3 that were postponed the last 6 weeks that we pushed off later in the year. Then we also fund money to bring especially school kids, kids from poor neighborhoods, especially kids of color, a lot of young people that don't often get to go to museums or haven't seen art by the most important artists of our time. So as much as I enjoy the art personally, the joy I get from sharing the art far exceeds the amazing joy I get from experiencing the art.
And do you have another piece we could look at?
Sure.
Oh, what about that sculpture?
This is an artist. This is Lucinda Parker talking about a local artist. And as you know, my mother had the Fountain Gallery of Art for 25 years. So I love all the local artists. I think they're just as good. I think Lucinda Parker is just as good as Damien Hirst. Is she in all the international museums? No. But in terms of my eye, this is just as good. Not every artist can be in New York or be in London or have the right galleries to promote their work. But she's a wonderful, and I think probably she and another artist, Gregory Grennan, the most important artists in our community today. Now what she does, it's a painting, yes. Painting on wood. And what she's done here is she loves nature too. She's doing a wonderful series right now of Mount Hood in the mountains. But this series here, if you look at this, oh, it's like a moonlight figure up here. We're looking sort of at the forest and the rivers, and it seems very Oregon to me.
Yeah.
Okay, it has all these elements of her looking at. Now remember, these artists are not photographers. We have photographers. Artists look at the world around them. And then in their creative mind, as I said about Frank Stella, artists see the world in a different way than most of us do. So for me, I look at this and I think of the fields in the of Oregon. I look at the mountains. I look at the rivers. I look at the streams. I look at the sky. It just again takes my breath away. And she is just so wonderful. She had a major retrospective at the Hallie Ford Museum in Salem last year. She went to the museum art school. She's been one of the best art supporters in the community, helping all the young artists. She's a role model of what an artist in the community can do by being part of that community. Wonderful, wonderful artist.
So it's a kind of a rectangle. What is it, like 3 feet by 1 foot?
Yeah. And yes. And it's on wood, and it's three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. But speaking of local artists, we have another one here, Jay Backstrand. And Jay was in my mother's gallery, and his work always intrigues me. I can never quite figure out what he's thinking or what's going on, you know. And I love that. I mean, if you look at what he's done here, he's got this very sort of Buddhist-like female figure that maybe the nose has been smashed off because of some tribes not liking images or whatever. He's got people, hands over here, bananas here, an image here of sort of a scene of something. I mean, I love it because I can't figure out what's going on. So when I look at it, it always sort of, you know, intrigues me. Now over here we have a piece. This came from...
John, what's it called?
I don't know what the name of this is. Now, this came from the Martha Lee, the Russo Lee Gallery, a wonderful local gallery, just as the piece over here came from Elizabeth Leach, another wonderful gallery in Portland. This is by Malia Jensen, and this is a fascinating piece. Because first you have the two little wolves down there, out of plastic. These are sort of plastic wolves. It comes all together. And then you have this tree. But what's interesting is this is a created tree. So this is a tree made out of plywood because it has all these pieces in it. And then it has these very sensual kinds of shapes here that to me are very sexual in nature, very, very romantic. So you've got this organic tree that she's created a representation of a tree, because she could have cut a tree and just had a tree here. But here she's creating a tree. And then she has these pieces that have been cut off, these limbs, and then she has the little wolves guarding it, like guarding the forest. So just a wonderful, wonderful artist, and Liz Leach does a great job in this community of getting artists outside the community. Whereas Martha...
People would know Malia from the big plywood beaver in the entrance to Wieden and Kennedy.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
So this is a tree. It's a kind of a denuded tree stump. I don't know. Maybe 10 feet tall. Eight feet.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It's pale wood. So there are breast-shaped stumps.
Exactly. Exactly. So I mean, it creates again this wonderful word I like to use, tension between the organic and the created. Okay. And then when she creates it, it creates these like Mother Nature. I mean, think of a tree of being a feminine image of something that helps, you know, nurture. It grows, it creates shade, it lets the seedlings drop down like a mother, and little pup trees grow up. So these, I didn't think about it when I first got it, but you look at these, they look very breast-like and very feminine, very sexy, you know, like a woman's lower part and whatever. I mean, so it like nature, and the wonderful way it replenishes itself, and so here you have plywood, which is taking trees and making, you know, 4x8 sheets that we use in housing and so forth. So she's using a man-made technique to create a representation of the real thing, a tree, and then she has cut these stumps off, but in a very sensual sort of way that certainly looked like breasts. So you have Mother Nature and its role for all of us. Because when we get out in nature and we take those hikes, we feel refreshed, we feel renewed, just like a mother raising us. And so maybe a theme here right now is for those that can get out and just walk around the block or take a hike in those parks that are open or whatever, nature always restores our soul.
What do you think the plastic walls mean?
Well, I think she... I think she's also being whimsical and playing with us about the fact that they're different colored and they're plastic. I mean, you know it's a wolf, but you don't have wolves in these colors. So I think she's shaking us up because wolves, on one hand, they cause a lot of harm and whatever to livestock. On the other hand, these are sort of playful and fun in colors like their toys. And I think she's playing with these themes to let each of us look at it and see where we want to go in terms of our own interpretation.
And can you place it any way you like? If you own it, are there instructions about where the wolves go?
No, but when I saw it in the gallery, the wolves were right in front of it, so that's what I've always done. But yes, you can put the wolves. I guess we could also do this. I've never thought about it. You can turn the wolves so they're looking up at the tree. So here, maybe that's a better way of doing it. I've never thought of that. But with the wolves looking at the tree.
Do you move your arms around?
No, I generally, with the art I have in the house, because we have, we generally have about 400 or 500 pieces traveling at any one time to museums. We just finished a pop show in Roanoke, Virginia at the Taubman Museum. There's a big word art show of 227 works in Naples, Florida that has the biggest artists of Jenny Holzer, Barbara Kruger, Mel Bachner, Warhol, Edrochet, and others. We have a show of Kara Walker, the most important African-American black artist today, at Pendleton Art Center. And I love doing shows there. You know, for me, it's not about the size of the audience. It's about getting art to communities that otherwise wouldn't have a chance to see the amazing art. And we've had 4 shows in Pendleton, and the gutsiness of Roberta Lavador, the director there, to take hard-hitting art and get it up in that mm-hmm. community. I'm so proud of her, and we get 2,000 or 3,000 people to see the art. We have a show at Vassar right now, Art Museum of Louise Bourgeois. We've got a show at of Alison Saar, one of the most important African-American black mm-hmm. artists now in the country, that is traveling.
It just finished at Witherspoon.
At the Witherspoon Museum, mm-hmm. and now it's... So the current shows are held up now because all the places are shut down and the art's on the walls. We have a big show at the Nevada Museum of Art of... about 120 things of Kenda Wiley, big paintings, and a number of major artists there. So that opening was delayed, but it'll happen in a month or two, and we'll get back on track.
We have 2 minutes left. If you came into your home and all the art was gone, the walls were bare, how would you feel?
I would cry. I've said before, for me, waking up without art around me would be like waking up without the sun. And I guess what I'd stress your audience is, whether you buy something for $5 at a Saturday market, whether your kids make a little painting for you, a finger painting or whatever, whether you take some paper and create something, we're all artists. I'm lucky that I have some of the biggest artists of our time, but that doesn't matter. What matters is that each of us is inspired by wonderful, beautiful objects around us. And that can be a stick you pick up on the street, an apple. The point is that, especially at times of stress, we need art and joy in our lives.
Well, thank you for inviting us into your home. It's very generous. I don't know anyone who's, done this lately. It's just very good to see what the collector has on their own walls at home.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, one thing, we do have a show of John Baldessari at the Blue Sky Gallery in Portland as soon as the curfew is lifted. And also, the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University has an amazing exhibition of R.B. Smith, local African-American black artist, that's phenomenal, and another artist, and not work for my collection, but that's free. Both those places are free. So as soon as the quarantine lifts, get yourselves out of the house, get yourselves out of the apartment, take your kids. And let them see that amazing art.
Well, thank you for inviting us into your home. It's very generous, so thank you. This is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. We'll be right back.
like you to meet a friend of ours who goes by the name of Killer Joe. Picture a so-called hippie or hip cat standing on a corner in a neatly pressed, double-breasted, form-fitting pinstripe suit, a pair of pointed-toed shoes with bold white stitches around the soles, a black shirt, long white tie, a black pencil mustache, and, of course, a very wide-brimmed black felt hat. Killer Joe always has a pocket full of loot, but only the kind that jingles. You see, he likes to play the horses. He is most certainly a ladies' man. As a matter of fact, he is always willing to accept cash contributions from them for any cause, namely his own. The most important thing about Killer Joe that you have to know is that he's very much against manual labor. Killer Joe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria.